Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott from London this time. So a big welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Are you fully recovered from your lurgy last week, I hope?
Yeah, sorry, everyone, for my absence. I had a bit of a stomach bug, which was unfortunately Thursday night and Friday morning I was passing out, and then I was passing blood for about 3 or 4 days. But I'm all
Christ.
So I'm absolutely fine. No, I've got Crohn's, so it's sort of like it was exacerbated when you got a stomach bugs. But anyway, back to normal. But regardless of that, the actual markets since our last show have been pretty perky of late, and they're up sort of 6 to 7%. Have you been buying or selling anything of late? And also, just as we're now 5 months into the year, how's your sort of portfolio progressed?
Well, my trading account, actually, which I do most of my transactions through, but it's not a particularly big account, but that's hit a new all-time high today. Well, I say all time. I reactivated it from a dormant account about 3 years ago, so it's about a 3-year high. Doing really, really well. So I've been recycling the profits into what have I've been buying. I topped up my Beeks Financial Cloud. That is just one of the most horrible shares to hold because it just relentlessly drops every day. But I'm happy with the news flow from the company. So I topped that up. I've doubled my position size in Jet2.com this week because it seems to me there's been only a very modest bounce from the lows, and it's just dirt cheap, I think. A few other things I've topped up as well, but those, CT Automotive, I bought some more of those after publishing an article on Sunday. I convinced myself to buy some more, so I think I bought right at the top of the latest spike, but never mind. So, yeah, been quite active, actually. How about you?
Well, yeah, I mean, my portfolio is likewise. I mean, luckily, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, I've benefited from sort of indicative approaches for Tate and Lyle and Aspire Healthcare, which we've got a question actually from Andy, and he's basically saying, are the double-digit discounts a sign that the bids are going to fall through? The answer to that is, when you haven't got a formal document, if you just look at it on odds and probabilities, okay, roughly around about 50 to 60% of them go through if it's getting close, like Spire but that means it's sort of 50 to 40% can also still drop away. So these are not signed documents. If they're signed agreed bids, then usually 90% go through. So the answer to that is, Andy, I think the market's pricing it as just on that sort of probability basis. I've always held them. I think they're fundamentally cheap and look at the intrinsic value. And I think for an acquirer, as we've talked about many a time before, off market to a private owner, they're worth a lot more. So there's no reason for me to sell. I'm not worried about them at all. If they go down, then it's a pain. But I've always got a 3 to 5 year time horizon. So short term trading isn't a real problem. Now, he's got an interesting question for you, actually, Paul, because he's talking about Beeks. What are your views on what's been happening with the shares? Is it anything to do with the spike in DRAM memory costs that may be impacting negatively the hardware element of their high-speed trading systems that go into these stock exchanges?
It's possible. I mean, I think people tend to try and look for facts to fit around whatever the price is doing. You know, actually, share price is falling. It's usually because Just demand and supply. It's just funds driven. You know, people, funds having redemptions and whatnot. We've seen a lot of that. So I don't think you can always rationalize the share price movements to what may or may not be happening in the background. I mean, I do recall they had a stockpile, I think, of servers, which, I mean, their main capex is servers and cabling, I believe. So I think they've got a stockpile of that. So I'm not aware that they would be particularly impacted. So it's possible, I suppose. But no, I think it's just supply and demand. You know, you've obviously got institutions probably dribbling stock out in the background, and you've got a buyer's strike, haven't you? But then what tends to happen? You get a reasonably good trading update, and it just goes vertically up, and you can't buy. So that's fingers crossed. That's what will happen anyway. And they've mentioned in the past, Beaks have said they've had numerous takeover approaches, you know, so it could, again, if you try and time your entry point with these things, I think it was Lord Lee who said, if you want to win the lottery, you've got to buy a ticket.
I think you're spot on in terms of memory prices with Beaks. They don't do masses of equipment. Yes, they put in servers and special software on top, but they're not exactly, I don't think they're buying millions and millions of memory chips, high expensive.
No.
So I'm with you. I think if they would be impacted for those small parts, but in the bill of material, in terms of a total solution, I think it's minuscule. It would be a price increase. I don't know. I mean, that'd be my I'd be stunned if it isn't. So I'm with you. I think I think it's a red herring, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I do. And it's not as if they're, you know, having to do machine learning or AI teaching AI bots using huge processing power. They, you know, they do some AI stuff, but it's fairly peripheral, I think. So what's that I've just dropped? Oh, it's my phone. Sorry. Carry on, Paul.
Okay. At least you haven't dropped your brain there. That's the main thing. We got a great question from Dave Fruitcake, 6535. He's asking about a bit of a meme stock, actually. It just has gone bonkers. Invinity Energy Systems, which I think does these palladium flow batteries that go into grid scale power deployments, and particularly into sort of like for data centers. And I think what's happened is that they've just won this big contract in Switzerland, if I remember from a contract announcement, that was something like a 1 gigawatt up to, or something like that. And it's going to be massive, but it is a design contract. Anyway, the shares have just rocketed since that contract win. Is this got substance to it, or is this a sort of like another meme stock frenzy? What's the view?
It's outside of my scope, Paul. This one, I'm afraid, we don't really cover. We haven't covered it since September last year, so I'm just not up to date on this. I mean, looking at the figures, it seems to be. I don't think it's. Yeah, it's not profitable. It's just not the type of thing we cover. Minuscule, very small turnover, I see. It's not one we cover, I'm afraid, so I can't add anything to this. Yeah, heavy losses every year. We don't really do blue sky stuff on my Substack. We do value and GARP shares. So have you got any views on it, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, all I would say, Dave, is that... They, you know, with this palladium technology, it sits, I think, out in sort of like the cycle times for batteries of around about, I think it's 8 hours to 12 hours. I mean, for sort of like fast deployment, sort of like grid scale batteries, you still use those lithium ion batteries. But for anything a bit longer, then these are used. And clearly, it's a serious customer with a serious idea that they're going to deploy lots of these palladium, and they were, you know, in a huge, you know, sort of capacity. So it's definitely got a good shot. But all I would say is that I don't know enough about the technology alternatives, which are outside and potentially cheaper, because people are talking about zinc batteries and iron batteries and air compressed air batteries of this sort of like cycle time with grid scale that could be a lot cheaper if the actual technology comes in. And to be honest, you know, is it likely a Brit is going to come up with the best grid scale battery when billions and billions of pounds and dollars has been spent in China? China is the world's best developer of batteries. I mean, it dominates the industry. So I don't know. I mean, I think the investors have definitely loved the contract, and it does say a lot about the quality of the company's technology to win that. But it is only a design contract. It's not a deployment one yet. So personally, if I own them at the moment, I may take some profits off. But, you know, that'd be only a sort of like just because I don't know enough about the technology.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I mean, Britain is very good at innovation. There's no doubt about that. But it's the Americans and the Germans and the Japanese and the Chinese who then seem to take our innovations and commercialize them, don't they? So, I mean, we've had those two other battery companies, haven't you? One begins with C. It's three letters.
You've got Ceres Power and ITM. They're fuel cell. Yeah. They're the electrolyzers.
Yeah, they've done phenomenally well. The shares have. But again, Blue Sky sort of early stage stuff, I just tend not to touch them because I always lose money when I invest in those sorts of things.
Okay. Well, anyway, the boom in takeovers is still carrying on. Let's go for one where it was when I cried off last Friday. We had Bodycote. It got a bid from private equity party Apollo. They put a £8.85 indicative offer on Bodycote with a 16p dividend. It looks reasonable given the sort of like the company's, you know, sort of patchy track record, but it's not a blockbuster deal. It looks a bit mean to me. What was your take?
I actually think it's a fair price.
Yeah.
And I came to that conclusion. I never include the divvy in the price because you're going to get the divvy anyway, aren't you? So I just reviewed Bodycote's performance over the last 10 years, and it's just been very lackluster, really. So I think the price that Apollo has put on it looks to me to be very fair. So presumably they must be looking at it and thinking, oh, we can rationalize, we can strip out cost or something, because it's a financial buyer, isn't it, Apollo? They're not trade, are they? So I think it's probably a fair price. I suppose there's a possibility someone else might come in over the top, isn't there, if they see the company as strategically valuable. Because it's quite interesting how acquirers look at companies, isn't it? They often have I've got forecast PE of 17 times. Actually, that's not particularly high, is it? Maybe it is. Maybe they could go a bit higher. I mean, usually the first indicative offer, they're normally prepared to pay a bit more, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's mean, to be perfectly honest. And the reason why I say that, it equates to about 8.5 times EBITDA. Now, we all know they supply basically defense and aerospace and sort of like these other sort of like tough, rugged applications with sort of like really hardening coatings and this sort of stuff. Now, we know from Hardide, which we'll come on to later on, that this sector's really going through the moon. But the rest of the business, automotive, and I think some of the industrials, is a bit weak. But that's going through a transition. So this is 8.5 times on sort of like mediocre stroke trough type EBITDA rather than sort of through cycle, particularly when they're going through an upcycle process with aerospace and defence. And there's a bunch of other applications that require really hard space and stuff like that, really hardcore hardening. So I would say to win this, the board are not going to recommend. If I owned them, I would say the chances of the board recommending at 8.85 is low. And I think they'll do the rounds with our shareholders and say what would be a sensible offer. And I would say, well, minimum you'd be 10 times EBITDA, which would be a tenner. 10 quid a share on this one.
Okay.
So what you've got, and you're really good at this, what you've got on this one is looking at the upside and downside to the undisturbed price. Now, the undisturbed price, if it fails, is probably going back to about 657 quid. And if you get a bid at 10, then you go up 2 quid. So on this one, I would say it's hedging your bets. You might want to do what you tend to suggest, which is 50-50, you know, slice 50 off and run 50.
Yeah, it's quite a long way short, as you said. It's quite a long way short, isn't it? Of the 8.85 bid, 8.24. I mean, that's 60p in it, isn't it? If the bid goes through, and if it does go through, it's probably going to be a higher figure than that. So, and 17 times forward earnings is not the end of the world if the bid falls through. What do you reckon? You reckon it would drop to about 7 quid, do you, Paul?
I think about seven quid might be going back. You know, yep.
Yeah, and at that level, you'd want to hold, wouldn't you? If you because it stacks up on that valuation. So quite a nice risk reward one. A similar one that I actually bought recently, not similar company, but similar takeover situation, where there's a big gap between what the bid would likely be at, was Advanced Medical Solutions. I picked up some of those.
Yep. Let's discuss that one. Yeah, because basically what happened is I think the previous bidder, TA Associates, decided to walk away.
That's
their,
right.
Their provisional offer about £2.80. And then after about a week, the board said that they'd got a preliminary approach that they'd received on the 30th of April. So way before this one had been terminated, the other ones had been walked away from. I think it was, it's something like HB Huber or something like that, is it?
HB Fuller.
The provisional, well, they didn't say, but the press are reckoning it 285p. So
okay.
So what do you think this one's going through then, or got a good chance?
I don't know. I just thought the gap, it was, yeah, I think it was, could have even been the next working day, actually. I think the TA Associates deal fell through on Friday. And then I think it was on the following Monday or Tuesday, they announced HB Fuller, which is NASDAQ listed, about $3 billion, I think. Although I did note it has a fairly weak balance sheet. So I'm not entirely sure how HB Fuller was planning to fund this possible bid, but it's a trade buyer. They're basically, they do something in advanced adhesives, which is very similar, I think, to so I reckon upside on this could be £2.80 to £3, maybe. And I bought them at £2.20, which I thought was, and I'm really, with me, I only buy stuff if I'm happy with to end up holding them if the bids fall through. Do you know what I mean? It's got to stack up on both a bid or no bid. And I like the value. I like the company, Advanced Medical Solutions, and I like the valuation. And then I've got maybe 30-odd% upside if a bid does come through. So I think that's really good risk reward. So I like that one.
Yeah, you and I, we're cheapskates, aren't we? Because when the TA Associates bid fell through, I haven't got any spare cash, but I did have a dividend which came in, so I picked up just a few, sort of like, you know, really sort of toe.
Oh, hot. Did you?
I did.
Yes,
yeah.
So you've got some as well. Yeah,
I've got a few, but I don't think what they've had four bidders over the past 2 years. Okay, all about 260, 280, and now 285, and every single one has been rejected by the board, and that's assuming presumably the board's gone to the shareholders and said, does this make sense? And they've all come back every time and said, no, it's got to start with a three. Okay. And you can understand why, because basically 285, it works out at about 12 times EBITDA. Okay. Which isn't bad. However, you know, it's definitely for this quality of sort of like, you know, wound care, tissue healing type business with lots of approvals and regulatory backing and all this sort of stuff and customers and logistics. And they're going through the rationalization after their Peter Surgical acquisition about 2 years ago. Where this has got a lot of extra juice in it. I think it's just got to start with a three and probably around about 315. So unless HB Fuller can come up with a £3.15 or at least £3, I don't think it's going through. And that's, I think correctly, the shares are saying they're trading at £2.15. But let's be clear about it. This may, and I, you know, underline bold, this may be a must-do deal for HB Fuller. Okay. Because you rightly picked up they're 3.4 billion market cap with not a brilliant balance sheet. They've got about 1.9 billion debt. But let's just say hypothetically, this is a must-do deal for HB Fuller because they want to get into like hardcore medical, you know, wound care, tissue healing, rather than just sort of like adhesives, which is what a lot of part of their business is. Their medical side's only quite small. And if they're interested, that's showing they want to move to healthcare where the margins of sustainability are better and they're not competing against the likes of the Chinese.
Yes.
So if I was the CEO and wanted to prove my mettle, yeah, you would say, right, okay, I'm going to put a three on this, get the irrevocables for everybody, okay, and then tell my bankers I'm going to sell off my old adhesives business sell that and to fund it off. And therefore you've basically changed it. It's like a two-step process. But that is a big if, and the market doesn't believe it, and it wants to show the money story rather than you know basically assume that's the case.
Yeah, interesting. No, I mean, I just think risk reward on AMS shares looks really good. I think so. I'm happy to hold that, and if a bid happens, great. If it doesn't, then it doesn't really matter. It's a good business that I'd be happy to own anyway. So, yeah, love situations like that. But you're the undisputed takeover king, Paul. You've made brilliant calls this year on numerous things. So I worship at the altar of your views on takeovers. So it's great that you like AMS as well.
Yeah, no, but I mean, yeah, I think you've got the theme tune for it. I'm the fluky takeover person of the day, you know. But it was absolutely just pure luck that I got one day. And let's be clear about it, the probability, there's only about 3-4% of listed companies each year which are taken off the market. It's about 50 or 60, and there's about 1,300, 1,400. So it's small, but it's small. So trying to act, it's a needle in a stack and just pure luck. So there's no, other than trying to improve those probabilities, you know, which you can do. Which I'm doing a presentation at Mello on Wednesday morning, if anybody's interested, on takeover deals and trying to add it. But frankly, it comes down to pure luck. And if you've been what we used to say, you've been jammy, you know, when you were sort of like, you know, on a couple of deals, then don't expect that to continue. So
But I mean, it really, again, it just shines a light, doesn't it, on how cheap UK mid caps in particular are. So I'm hunting more in the mid cap space now for opportunities like this, because that seems to be where most of the takeover activity is. Let's hope some of it filters down to small caps as well. So, but the whole market is feeling quite buzzy at the moment. Yes. I'm really feeling a much more optimistic outlook. I mean, loads of my sort of core positions that I've held for a long time, that they're all going up at the moment, or nearly all. It's very, very encouraging, I think. It feels like we've turned a corner, actually.
I hope you're right. You're right. I mean, so is mine. I mean, just give the people, you know, I was in January, like everybody else, I was up about 8% my portfolio. Happy days in 1 month. Wow, that was great. February was flat to slightly down because people were a bit worried and this sort of an AI was kicking off. March was just terrible.
Dire, wasn't it?
I went from about 8% up to about 12 or 13% down. And then April, 20% swing. I mean, that was a lot of bread as well. In absolute terms, and then and then April started to improve, and now I think I'm about 8%. I'm back to where I was at the end of January.
Yeah, same here.
It's been nuts this year.
Yeah, I mean, you do sometimes wonder, is it worth stock picking? You know, we can just buy a basket of random shares and they all tend to go up and down a similar round, don't they?
Yeah. Anyway, let's continue with the old takeover targets we've got, because the day after, again, my sickness, we had Gamma Communications. Yeah. There was a Sky exclusive breaking news saying that a couple of old industry sort of stalwarts of B2B communications were lining up a bid at £1 billion for Gamma. And there's also, they'd already mentioned, there's already two private equity people hovering off after the board kicked off a formal sale process about a month ago. So there's plenty of bees buzzing around the honeypot here. What's going to be the conclusion on this one?
Well, we got this spot on, actually, the last time we spoke. I think it was about 2 weeks ago, or maybe three. We talked about this and we said we thought risk reward was very, very good. And then I think several hours later, the shares went up about 10%, I think, didn't they, on a bid approach, in preliminary discussions with several parties. And it named some of them as well, Epiris, and then a consortium of Oakley and Giacom.
Yep.
And possibly others. So it looks like a live situation. I've not seen any news since the 15th of May, but I think just to repeat what we said last time, I think, again, this is quite a nice risk-reward one where, it's gone ex-divi today. I think that's why it's down sharply today. you're on a nice modest PE. So if you get stuck with them and the bid talks fall through, it looks quite a nice share to own. And then you've got, I think you were talking about maybe as much as 13 or 14 quid, weren't you?
I've run the numbers, and even at the sort of like indicative, you know, £1 billion, which effectively, there's a guy called Peter Dubin, who's Oakley Capital, who's well known in this area, who loves this space. I think he used to run Daisy. You know, remember Daisy used to be on and so it's the same business, B2B sort of like communications, or what they call unified communications as a service or something like that. This is definitely one of the bigger dogs in the market after the big telco operator. So there aren't that many trophy assets in the industry of this size that you can buy in Europe. Okay. So this has definitely got some rarity value to it.
Yeah.
And £1 billion is 11 quid per share, which is, again, looks too cheap to me. I mean, it's only seven times EBITDA. This is, to me, it's got to go at eight or 10 times EBITDA. And that still wouldn't be a blockbuster deal, which means I think this is going to minimum 13 quid to get through. Okay. We are at the very early stages of formal. So I think these three parties are all doing effectively, they've got the IM. you know, the information memoranda. They've put indicative bids in, and then the board are looking at what who should be brought back into the data room, and then have the board presentation. So I would say this has probably got at least another 2 months until you get a formal offer document. But given there's three parties, right, I would be stunned if you don't get a formal offer bid for it. And I think when you've got a competitive auction, I think they can go. I would not be surprised if you get 13 quid off this, you know, in a full formal agreed bid. So if I owned it, I would say, yeah, minimum downside, because I think the business is doing okay myself.
Yeah, very good. And yes, you're right. On the 15th of May, it did say it was in preliminary discussions. So like you say, probably several months poring over the detail. And also, I've just checked its balance sheet and it's fine. It's seems to be a capital light business model with negligible net debt, but also slightly negative net tangible asset value. So do you know, it's not sort of, yeah, I assumed they had big data centers, but it doesn't look as if they do.
No, I don't think they do. No, I think they basically just run most of their software and the communications on top of sort of like a, you know, maybe Amazon Web Services or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. No, maybe it's all outsourced or something, but it's a very modest balance sheet anyway. But yeah, I think you're right on this. I think risk reward looks pretty favourable to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And then this morning last night, in fact, we got another bid for basically PPHE. A hotel, that's the Park Plaza Hotels Europe business that has sort of like upmarket places you can stay in London, Amsterdam, Croatia and places like that. Got a bid from an ex-shareholder, Fattal Hotel Group, which I think is Israeli, one of the largest ones, at £22 per share. What's your view on this one?
Yes, it's a rather strange company. I think I've followed this for years. They're nice hotels. I went to a function at one in St. Paul's, I think, in London, and that it was a lovely hotel. But I think the mistake in a way they made, I think, with this company is they overcomplicated the financial structure. It was very, very difficult to analyze the numbers. And for years, they've been telling us, PPHE has, that their NAV is up here and the share price is down there. But I think the market didn't really believe the EPRA NAV figures on it, which was over £27 a share. And they've today announced pretty much, I think, an agreed bid at £22 a share, which was a long way short of any NAV. It's kind of in between where NAV was and where the share price was. They've gone sort of in the middle, which does rather reinforce the fact that the NAV in the accounts isn't real, you know, or it's overstated, really, if they've accepted a bid that's £5 short of it. But look, it's a great outcome for shareholders, I think. Very well done. I'd grab the money personally if it was me.
Yeah, I think they're basically, the board put the business up for sale, didn't it? And it looks as though these guys are the only ones which are putting their hands in the pocket. But
you're right. 21st of November, strategic review and start of the formal sales process. I'd forgotten about that. So offer period. So quite a long time people have had to wait, 6 months, haven't they? Which is quite surprising somebody's taken that long, really. But yeah, I think it's a good outcome. The board have recommended it, I think. It looks nice.
Yeah, I think it's just a rule of thumb you need to expect with formal sale process. They're going to take longer because they may have just appointed advisors. They need to then do the potential buyers list. They need to contact the buyers, do the non-disclosure agreements. They're then IM looking at it. Then each buyer needs to basically get a board approval to submit it. If you think about it, and you put all that together, just to get to basically, you know, formal documents, it's probably 4 months, and therefore 6 months until you get an agreed, until you get your money, or 6-7 months, and you get, it's probably not dissimilar. If you get once you've got formal docs, then you're pretty much okay. All right,
They didn't really give updates. That's the other thing on this one, as far as I can recall. I'll just call up the list of our, well, it doesn't really matter, but okay, cool.
Okay, good. Well, let's go to another one which has put itself up to sale, which I didn't realise is Aptitude Software. These guys doing a formal sales process. They basically do this software that is really financial consolidation, packages that go into large corporates. So let's just to say, for instance, I don't know, you're a Rolls Royce around the world, et cetera, and you've got subsidiaries in each different country manufacturing, and a lot of them are using different, you know, just because of history, you've done acquisitions, different accounting packages. Then these guys act as like a, helps the financial controller consolidate all of that data, okay, then do real-time reporting. So you can actually suck information out like on a daily sales, daily profits. You can change the number, you actually try and influence the numbers before you have a problem in a month's time, you know, when you'd normally do in your monthly results. So you can see why this is useful. However, the problem they've had is that they haven't grown, or they've been going down, the sales have, for the last two or three years. Anyway, yeah. I think the shareholders have got a bit bored, so they've decided to put the company up for sale. It's very cheap for a software company. What's your
it is I was just thinking that forward PE of 13 times, and it has net cash, but that's timing differences, cash rather than free cash. So it looks good value, doesn't it?
Yeah. So do you think any interested buyers on this one? I mean, basically talking about financial corporate software.
Have they? Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a strong view on this one. We looked at this yesterday. I think it gave an update, and we just kind of put it in our don't know tray. But yeah, looking at the share price, it got whacked in the SaaSpocalypse, didn't it, in February, and it hasn't really bounced, barely at all, from that level. So maybe somebody will table an opportunistic bid. I don't know.
Yeah. I must admit, I've got an idea who might. Let me just Oh, damn. Sorry about that.
It's quite small, isn't it? 115 million market cap. So that's right. a mere morsel, really, for one of the larger software groups.
Yeah, no. The type of people I think would be very interested in these, is people like Vin Muria of Advanced ADFA. Oh, because she loves niche software, which is very sticky, very useful, and has got pricing power. Now, if she got hands on this one, and I wouldn't want to put words on her mouth, but I'm sure she could do wonders for the top line in terms of pushing the pricing up, because this is like, in the grand scale of things, of a large corporate, it's highly mission critical, certainly in the short term.
Yeah.
A drop in the ocean of their budgets and stuff like that. They wouldn't even register on their profit dial. So I think this smacks of 115 million market cap. I mean, let's be clear about it. Somebody like Vin Muria wouldn't go overboard on a price, but I could easily see £3 plus on this one. And I think she's got a bunch of cash still hanging over with Advanced EDFN, looking for homes that to go to. It seems marriage made out of heaven, perfectly honest.
Yeah, interesting. I think she more bargain fishes, doesn't she, for things within larger groups that are non-core. Was it Capita, I think,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Do you think she'd actually pay up those sort of 18 times PE or something to acquire this?
If you did £3, I mean, it currently trades on, let me just get this right, trades on 1.3 times sales, 7.5 times EBITDA, right? I think, she would put the prices up by 50% in a heartbeat.
Okay? Oh, I see. Yes. Yep. The prices charged to customers. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, and so that would just go straight to the bottom line. So that would be basically on 73 million of sales. Mm. I think the ARR is about, 50 or 60 or something like that. So if you put it up by 50%, you'd have 20 to 30 million of pure profit straight down to the bottom line. There you go. You could afford to pay £3 a share dead easy.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it would, though, depend on what the contractual arrangements are. You know, they could be locked into agreed pricing that you couldn't just rip it up and charge what you like, could you?
There'd be SaaS 12 months. I don't know. I mean, hey, all I'm saying is that this looks as though if I was a betting man, okay, which I am obviously, because I'm in sort of like basically software and I'm in the stocks and shares game.
Yeah, my friends call it posh gambling. Okay, what posh we do.
Somebody as esteemed as Vin Murray will have a really good look at this, because she's got money to deploy. She can probably put a very easy turnaround solution together. And I bet you shareholders would just love it if she took control of this type of business. I think they'd go, it looks like a an asset that has been not maximized to its full potential. Okay. To me, anyway. Yeah. But hey, I could be totally wrong. But I will.
So you tempted to have a punt on Aptitude?
I haven't got any flipping money. That's the problem. I'm totally skint at the moment. I mean, it's great. I I've had a few deals go. When the deals get me, I'll give you some money. But anyway, I haven't got that many. Yeah. We just on Capita. We've got Drew. He's asking about your thoughts on Capita following the Richard Staveley interview. Because apparently he took the mick out of me and you, didn't he?
He did. Oh, do you know, I really enjoyed that podcast you did with him. It was brilliant. What a masterclass. So, yeah, at the risk of infuriating Richard again, he makes it. I mean, he's got the time to really drill into these things, you know, and get into the weeds about the various parts of the business. So he gave a very good explanation of it, basically saying that it's now two key divisions, isn't it? And he reckons they've been sorted out type of thing. Whenever I look at it, I just unfortunately come to the same conclusion. I haven't got, because I'm covering 820 companies doing desktop reviews of them, I just haven't got the spare time to drill down into it to the level of detail that I think you need to do. That's why it always sort of ends up in my don't know tray, unfortunately. I mean, yeah. Richard Staveley gives an excellent summary of the appeal of this share. I just don't really have a view on whether he's right or wrong, you know. But look, with his track record, I'd say the odds are probably in your favour if you own this share, aren't they?
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I mean, the one thing that I've always been a bit sceptical, I've been sceptical on it, there's two major things, which they now see. The first one they seem to address, which is if they've been shrinking, they have this working capital unwind, which is a bit of a problem.
Oh, yes.
Cash, okay. Richard's main argument is that forget all that, as in, like, if you just run it on a sum of the parts, which they're now breaking up, then it's worth, you know, multiples more than what the current share price is, because it's got really valuable pensions business in there. And then the other thing which is on the back of my mind is these guys do white collar outsourcing rather than blue collar outsourcing. And let's be clear about it, agentic AI is wiping out me and you with our white collars, you know. It's not a booming area, okay? Because there are lots of simple outsourced office jobs are going to disappear in the next 5 to 10 years. So I think the market, the total addressable market for white collar outsourcing is going to be shrinking. His argument is such that because they're so they've been taking up and developing AI so fast compared to their competitors, that even if the market is decreasing, their market share is going to increase and more than offset that. And they're going to be one of the major beneficiaries. And that's just a different view to a certain extent. But I do think outsourcing in blue collar is a better place to be than outsourcing in white collar, because I think the blue collar jobs are still staying to a certain extent.
Yeah, interesting take on it. Thanks, Paul. I mean, I'm still in information gathering, listening and learning mode on AI. Yeah. And I sort of put bull and bear points about it as I come across them in my podcast. So, but I must admit, I am leaning towards a bit of skepticism on it, because, I mean, I've heard about situations where people have got AI chatbots dealing with customers and they've had to switch them off in the end because they're making chaotic poor decisions, you know. And I've dealt with AI bots from my Airbnb hosts that I know is only a small version, and to be honest with you, it just irritated me. And all it does is replies to you summarizing what you've just said to it, and it's all this AI slop, they call it, don't they? So I remain to be convinced that these things can actually transform large numbers of jobs. But, you know, let's see when companies talk about AI, I look for that they're using AI a lot. I say, well, OK, in that case, is your profit going up as it should be? And is your headcount going down because it should be? And you can just sense check it. Checking those two numbers. CT Automotive, which I've been buying recently, he's raving about AI, saying they're actually developing such good AI tools that will become a profit center that they will sell to the rest of the industry. So I thought, well, let's double check it. And sure enough, his headcount did drop 10% last year, and the profitability is trending upwards. So that kind of indicates to me that what he was saying about AI does sound genuine. Whereas I think with a lot of companies, it's maybe performative. I saw a statistic of a study in America reckoned that nearly 40% of what companies talking about using AI is basically hot air. Performative, because they feel they need to be telling people they're using AI, but it's not it's not really. So fascinating to see how this will all happen. I call it automation, because that's what it basically is. I don't think these things are necessarily intelligent. I think because then people imagine it has sort of magical, mystical powers, don't they? Which I'm yet to be convinced on that, because I haven't really seen any evidence of it yet. But
Okay, well, stick with CT Automotive, because you did mention you picked up. These guys do they do illustrious things like cup holders and armrests for the interiors of cars and stuff like that. And we talked about it, I think, 2 weeks ago, which had just been written off. And then all of a sudden, the shares have gone up by 50%. You've owned shares, and then you've bought some more, haven't you? So what's the investment case for CT Automotive?
Well, the funny thing is, I tried to sell them right at that dip at about 23p. And the only reason I still hold it is because I couldn't sell them. There was no bid. I think I sold 10,000 shares or something, and I had about 50,000. I've increased that position quite a bit now, it's one of my larger holdings now. So the results came out for 2025, and they were very good. Underlying profit up about 20% on the prior year to $9.5 million. Bear in mind, at that dip there, this thing had a market cap of £17 million or something. It's still low now. It's only on a forward PE of about 4x. The outlook for 2026 sounds fine. The balance sheet's okay. It's a little bit stretched, but what I did find buried in the notes to the accounts was a couple of not concerning, but a couple of negatives as well. So I published all that on my Substack, where we like to give the bull and the bear case. You know, we're not promoting shares in the hope that people buy them. That's not what we're doing. We're trying to come to a positives and negatives, you know, and throw it all to the readers, and then they can make their mind up. But it does look stunningly cheap. I mean, I can't get to a valuation below £1 a share. To me, you know, it's about 9p earnings. That would be a PE of about 11 times. They're very, very exciting what they're talking about doing. Basically, their factories are going to be controlled by agentic AI systems that they're developing in-house right now. The CEO is inspirational as well. There's a marvellous interview with him that's 2 years old now on the podcast series In the Company of Mavericks, which is a really good podcast series. And he's got a really inspirational rags-to-riches type of story, you know, dyslexic boy from a rundown council estate in London who just did all these side hustles when he was growing up, and self-made man. And he said 3/4 of people of top entrepreneurs are either dyslexic and or on the spectrum. And I thought, isn't that fascinating? Because they think differently in some way. And also, as he said, they can't get conventional jobs, because a lot of it, you know, you fall over at the interview stage. I thought, what an inspiring story from him, though, of succeeding when the odds were against him. So, you know, he's the sort of man you want to succeed. I'm trying not to get emotionally involved with the share, though, because that's usually a disaster when that happens, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, one thing which is, I mean, they've got decent margins, haven't they? 10% EBIT margins, which is very surprising for a sort of like a car manufacturing supplier into the big OEMs. I mean, to get those type of margins, excellent. I mean, which says, I guess, that they've been nailed on working capital. Because, I mean, invariably when you go into these large OEMs, they absolutely annihilate you on terms. It's like minimum, you know, 60 days, probably 90 days plus. And if it's in China, it's 160 or something stupid.
Yeah, more than that, 260. So they're not 260 days in China. So that's why they're not contracting with any Chinese OEMs,
right?
Because he said we can't absorb those sort of working capital terms. Debtors did go up, even though revenue went slightly down. And I've checked out the detail on this quite thoroughly. And one of their biggest customers went into Chapter 11 insolvency a year ago, but I've dug into the Chapter 11 of that, Morelli, I think it's called, and it seems to be a solvent restructuring. And some documents I found online said that the unsecured creditors are likely to be paid in full, or already have been. So I think they've dodged a bullet there. But on the margins, on your question on margins, I did discover in right at the back of the accounts in the notes, CT Automotive split out the tooling revenues and profits and the supply of the actual components. And the supply of the components is really low margin. It's the tooling that is high margin. I think 40 or 50% of the profit, I think, came from the tooling division, which is probably going to be inherently lumpy. So they don't volunteer that information in the webinars. Right. You know, you're getting the sugar-coated stuff. You have to dig into the detail to find, oh, it's actually not quite as good as he made out, but it's still good.
Okay, good. Well, let's move to experimental ledger. Let's go to an old favourite, Hollywood Bowl. I know we chatted to CEO and CFO about 3 or 4 months ago. But
we had a terrific meeting, didn't we?
Yeah, they've had a good start to the year. Seems everybody's been down the bowling alley. So shares rocketed yesterday. What's your latest?
Oh, I'm delighted with this one because I've been telling people for several years now that the share's the wrong price and it's too cheap. It's a self-funding, cash-generative rollout, basically. I think when we last spoke about it, my only complaint was that I think they're being too cautious with the growth because they're expanding faster, I think, in Canada now, aren't they, which is interesting. It's just a lovely business, and I think it surely, and it's got net cash on the balance sheet as well, generous yield of about 5%. Anyway, so it's just the wrong price, I think, and it has been for several years. I think the broker puts a price target of about £3.80 on it, which is a similar number to where I get to. And that's not a stretch, you know. I think you would think somebody would bid for it, but nobody has. It's quite surprising. I think private equity are just focused on software and AI, aren't they, maybe? But lovely company. So anyway, I felt vindicated in my bullishness yesterday, I think it was, when the H1 results came out. Very good. Like-for-likes about 2.3%, which in tough macro is not bad. It's very high margin because, of course, the gaming revenue is 100% gross margin, isn't it? And food and drink offering is pretty basic and decent margin as well. Very well run, as you correctly say. And they've got their own app, which is very easy to use. I've mystery bowled it. And I think it's a lovely business. And I think it's still good value. So I was tempted. My finger was sort of hovering over the sell button yesterday. I was up, 17%. Should I just bank some profits? Did the numbers and thought, it's still cheap. Why would I sell it? So no, I'm sitting tight on this. I'm very, very pleased with it. So yeah.
Has some of the sort of better performance this year, though, been driven by the wetter weather? Because you saw Kingfisher this week saying their sales of garden centre equipment had been delayed, a bit damp because of the wet weather. Now, these guys, Hollywood Bowl, do badly when it's roaring sunshine, as we found out last summer, but do pretty well when everybody has to be driven inside and it's wet weather. So there's that question, how sustainable is, and is it wet weather dependency? And then they've also got the World Cup coming up. And I would suspect we're going to be in front of our tellies. It's like 24/7 for the next sort of like, you know, a month and a bit, or a lot of the blokes are anyway. And therefore, they're not.
Yeah, I was going to say you might be, but I definitely won't.
Yeah. So how do you see this? Because I think they've probably, unless we have a really damp summer, which is always possible, I suspect that's going to normalize their first like three months trading.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, you're right. I mean, they pray for wet weather, don't they, at Hollywood Bowl, because then people want to do something indoors. So, but the interesting thing is we had that early and prolonged heat wave last year, didn't we? And which should have been bad for Hollywood Bowl, but actually they performed fine, which is quite interesting. They did all right last year. They were in line, I think. I don't think they warned on profits, Paul.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. Yeah, yeah, they did. Yeah, yeah, they did. They basically, everybody was complaining. They were saying, as in like, you know, oh, it's a bit damp to come out with a, you know, to blame it on the weather. But
that yeah, they actually, it wasn't a profit warning, but soft. Yeah, H1 was soft last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the shares dropped 8%. That was 29th May on the H1 result. Yeah. So, yeah, you got the that's not. We didn't flag it as a profit warning, though, because, warm and dry weather had an impact, they said a year ago. But I was right. But they still expected September 25 in line with expectations. So we were both right, Paul.
Yeah, okay. All right, brilliant. Let's go now to restaurants. We've got one of your favourites. Let's go to Tortilla Mexican, which is a strange one, a bit like Chipotle Challenger. You go, if you want your burrito or your chimichanga, these guys are the ones to go for. And they came out with an accounting issue in their French business, but their UK seems to be storming, and the shares likewise. In fact, I was just looking at the share price. 6 months, they're up. They're double, basically. Double in 6 months.
I know. I did well on this one, actually, because I could see it was a good business. And I went in to meet the former CEO when he was actually the CFO. Had a meeting with him 2 or 3 years ago, and he explained their strategy. And I like the product. The product's very tasty and sensibly priced. So on, although the balance sheet was a bit stretched, I did buy them at around 35p, I think, off the top of my head. But wow. I sold them. Yeah, no, I got them. That was several years ago, actually. So I did hold them for a couple of years. I didn't catch all of this move up, though. Unfortunately, I was selling them on the way up. But, you know, profit's a profit. It's a very interesting business. And unfortunately, I do have to apologize to the readers, because on my early morning skim on the 19th of May, when I saw accounting issues, I thought, oh, my God, you know, alarm bells go off, don't they? I thought this thing will plunge. And I don't know how I did this. I just obviously hadn't had enough coffee. I completely missed the fact that they said UK sales were up 12% like for like, which is phenomenal in the current macro. So, apologies to everyone that I just overlooked that. It was just a mistake. So I think given that the like-for-likes are so strong, the market's just disregarded the accounting issues in the French business. You do wonder if they bit off more than they could chew buying that French business. Sorry. And the balance sheet is... yeah, that's right. Too much chili sauce. So the balance sheet is pretty crap. It's got too much debt for the size of the business. So I think at some point it would be sensible for it to do a fundraise just to repair that balance sheet a bit, maybe a 5 million. So maybe expect a kind of 20% dilution to fix the balance sheet. But it's a very nice business, actually. Very nice business. They kicked out the CEO, didn't they? I'm not sure why. Am I imagining it, or is it up for sale?
I don't know. I've not heard it, actually. I couldn't comment now. I don't know.
No, that popped into my head. I can't remember where I read that. I can't see it in my notes here. So, but yeah, it's defied the critics and it's done well. So good luck to them.
Yeah, good. Okay, let's move to industrials. We've got one of your investors, I think, or subscriber, Tortoise Investor. He's asking about Hardide, which is this basically. They do tungsten hardening for really high performance activities, largely in defense and aerospace and probably space as well. They just keep getting better orders. And I know we've talked about it once, but I was just looking at the share price. End of November of last year, it was trading at about five or six p. It's now 10 bagged.
Wow, has it really? Isn't that incredible?
What's been driving this rocket?
Well, as you say, just looking at my notes here, it's just orders and order intake, new order, enlarged order. Yeah. It's fantastic. We turned positive on this actually in February this year because it was obvious you were getting not just a smattering of orders. It was obvious that something had changed, materially outperforming type updates. So we moved up from amber to amber green on the 26th of February. And yeah, since then it's doubled. So this has been that was a really good call, actually, even though I say so myself. And we're staying positive on it because it's one of those lovely situations where the earnings are being constantly upgraded. And actually, the share price is still good value. You know, despite the fact that it's, as you say, multi-bagged, the Cavendish, I think, keep putting the forecast up. So, I mean, God, that's fantastic, isn't it? As you say, people who bought on the first bit of good news really have been very well rewarded there. So I think if I held them, which I don't, I'd probably run with it, actually. I don't think I'd be top
side. It's the only share I think I've ever seen which is 10 bagged in 6 months, but is still trading at 10 10 times EBITDA, which is phenomenal given that growth.
It is, isn't it? It is. Obviously, the market is now saying, you know, the growth's got to continue. That's the thing, isn't it? If the orders fizzle out, you know, you'll be going most of the way back down again. But I can't see that, because what I really like about Hardhide in particular is the addressable markets are going to be vast, aren't they? Absolutely vast. Global, you know, aerospace, all sort, engineering defense, of all types, defense, massive, massive open-ended growth potential, I think, for this. I mean, do we know what IP it has? Because, I mean, I know roughly what it does, this special hardening, but do we know why? Do they have any proprietary techniques or patents? Do we know that, that give them a moat?
Yeah, all I would, I doubt it. What I would say they've got is basically certification to go onto these high performance applications. And that is, you've got to get security cleared. You've got to get defense cleared. There's a whole lot of, you know, of auditing that your supply chain needs to do. And I just don't think they'll allow Chinese to do it or this sort of stuff. And it underpins the, to be honest, it underpins the value of Bodycote, because, you know, Hardhide's on 10 times EBITDA. And I know Bodycote is an amalgamation of other stuff, but, and I said, I think it, to get that takeover, you're going to do 10 times EBITDA, and it's currently trading at about 7 or 8. So I think this is a really growth area, high performance, you know, part enabler, and for defense and for space is just a hot area at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Hardhide, I mean, I followed it since it listed, which I think was about 20 years ago. And it was a real massive disappointer. You know, just collapsed, the share price did, from after the financial crisis in 2009, just bumped along the bottom. And then there've been false dawns, several false dawns, where it's won orders and whatever. But this time round, it definitely feels different to me. I think they finally cracked it. And I did some digging and asked other people's opinions who know the company better than I. And they basically said it's the new CEO, apparently, has really got a much more commercial approach. And he's just getting out there and winning orders, or, the, you know, the team is, rather. Yeah. So I think this is the real deal. I think it's very, very good. So well done to people who spotted the opportunity. We did, annoyingly, but I didn't buy any. So, but you can't win them all, can you?
Okay, let's go to another industry. We've got Zote Foams. They put out, there was an AGM statement yesterday. These guys do specialist foams that go into all kinds of aerospace and industrial applications, but also about 40 to 45% of sales go into insoles for Nike running shoes. Business, I think the trading update was in line, but better than, effectively, it was, you know, better than people thought it would be doing. So shares went up.
Yeah, we looked at this yesterday, and my colleague, my co-writer John, wrote up a more detailed section on it. And I posted it late, so it's in today's report. We've been very enthusiastic about Zote Foams for a long time. We've covered it about 12 times over the last 18 months on my Substack, and we've been green every time. We've been just, you know, saying to people, look, this is a really nice business and it's too cheap. Still is. The shares have done well. We were pleased with the trading update. It was an AGM trading update yesterday on Zote Foams. And you're quite right. What they fund, it was in line, full year in line. But what we liked about it, it said the growth areas are more than offsetting the moderation in the footwear sector, which was expected. They flagged for some time ago that footwear had an exceptional year last year, and to expect it to go down a bit this year. They make these very high performance insoles for Nike, don't they, for a specific Nike range, and they're building a big factory with a third party expert out in Vietnam, I think it is, which I think the company's got quite high hopes for that. And you can buy it on a PE of only about 11 times. Balance sheet's okay. There's a little bit of debt, but not a problem. So I think it's still good value, Paul. So are you with me on this one? Or?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we spoke to the management team, Ronan Cox, and he's a really good chap. Seems to know what he's doing. So, yeah, I would just back him and carry on if I owned it. I don't own it because I know – one thing is always sort of like in the back of my mind, to get increases in capacity, you have to put a new factory in. So it's quite capex heavy. However, he did say when I pushed him on it, ultimately in 3 to 5 years' time, we may become, you know, in certain instances, basically factory free. We'll actually sell some of our infrastructure and become the IPR holder for these specialized foams and manufacture it. And that would be a perfect, you know, even better model. But that's not imminent. So, you know, I think that would be all upside anyway. And let's be clear about it. You never know. Somebody could take these guys over at some point in time. It's a good value business that would attract private equity, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe a trade buyer or as well. So, yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Zoke Firms. I've liked it for years. Don't currently hold. I made a right mess of this one. I got nervous just before results a year or two ago. And I thought, if I like the results, I'll buy them back. So I think I sold it near a multi-year low. And then the results came out and they were good and it just went vertically up. So I really screwed that up. It's a pity, but it's nice to get the investment thesis right, isn't it? Even if you mess up the actual trade, I still count it as a win if I've got the. A lot of my stuff is doing really well at the moment. Yeah. It's very pleasing. So yes.
We can all go out and celebrate this weekend, which is rather nice. Right, let's go through mop up some questions. We've got C7S. He's asking about Wise IPO that happened about a month ago and it's bombed so far. I think the shares are down about 10%. Any thoughts on why this sort of international payments business has not gone down great out in the States?
No, it's strange, isn't it? Because maybe people were buying in anticipation of it getting... Well, I remember one of your fund manager interviews, he reckoned this thing could be, a 10-bagger if you value it the way Americans value it. So I think people bought into all the NASDAQ listings going to turbocharge it. So the price shot up, didn't it? And then as soon as it listed on NASDAQ, it went straight back down again. Yeah. So I don't know. The market's... so fickle, isn't it? I mean, I love the story here. You've had several fund managers rave about it and explain the story. I think it sounds quite compelling. I think the bear argument on Wise is about I think that the some sort of crypto type
stable
of
coins. Stable coins.
Stable coins, is it? Yeah, could effectively remove the need to change currencies full stop, which sounds very far-fetched to me. I mean, what do you think on that?
I think that's far-fetched. The reason, all I would say, SE81, the reason why I think that the IPOs hasn't done so well is that there's an enormous amount of money which is being reserved currently for three huge IPOs, which are all in
great
January.
Point.
You know, you've got SpaceX, which is about 1.5 trillion. You've got Anthropic, which is nearly a trillion. You've got OpenAI, which is nearly a trillion. I mean, if you think about that, that's well over, $3 trillion of effectively capitalization, not new money, but capitalization. It's just sucking. People are reserving money. They want to get involved in these really hot IPOs. And therefore, something like a UK payments business coming on that is worth 10, 15 billion bucks. I mean, it doesn't even register on the Dow. People are not interested because they're just the amount of money is just just being swamped by what people want to do.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of that, isn't there?
Yeah.
And somebody was saying on CNBC the other day, they were saying that you've also got the tracker funds and obligated to buy these things. And like you say, the money's got to come from somewhere else, doesn't it? So which they were saying could be quite bearish for the FANG stocks because these new IPOs are so huge. Some of that money is going to come out of the FANG stocks, probably. So I thought that was quite an interesting angle on it. So
if you're a Tesla owner, you're betting on Elon Musk, and then you've got Tesla 2 coming along, and it's called SpaceX. If you want Elon Musk, you're going to go to SpaceX, aren't you? You're going to basically sell your Tesla and go into SpaceX. If I was going to find that'd be my trading arbitrage play of it anyway.
Yeah, maybe I'll stick another short on Tesla because the valuation's just nuts. It's insane, the valuation of that stock. So, this is all super frothy now, isn't it? I mean, we are in a multiple boom territory. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a bubble because a lot of people, are saying these valuations actually you can justify, but it's definitely boom conditions. Warren Buffett, I think, very recently, didn't he, said, I think he said something like, I can't remember a time where people were speculating to such an extent. And we know how these things end, don't we? So I'm going to put a two-year market crash prediction in place, because I'm always two years too early. So there we go. Scotty reckons we'll have a market crash in spring 2028.
Yeah, no, it could happen before as well. Well, before you put your short on Tesla, there has been rumours that Musk is going to get SpaceX to buy Tesla, which is one of the reasons why.
Oh, my God.
I know. You're going to have one. You're going to have an Elon, just one Elon company. So he's done that before. That was in his track record. Because he basically bought this, I think it was back in 2010 or something like that. He bought this solar panel business and brought it into Tesla and then shut it down because it needed some money. So he's done it before. So he got it through. But that'll be regardless. Okay, let's go to...
Don't bet against Elon, you're right.
No, yeah. We've got Sam Mann. He's asking about Pebble Beach Systems. These guys do software that go into TV stations and also online TV stations, things like Amazon, and they got Amazon Prime, that is, and Netflix and stuff, and help people do live play out of broadcasts and stuff like that. Shares have done really well. I think, this is Laurie Halls, isn't it?
I was just going to mention him.
Yeah, I mean, the shares have done really, really well. What's your latest on this one?
I like it too, actually. He was, I think on a webinar some time ago, he was extolling the virtues of Pebble Beach. Mm. And I think he's been quite, not activist, but almost, I think he's made it clear to the company that what he thought they needed to do in terms of strategy, you know, to make it leaner and more profitable, pay down the debt. That's exactly what they've done. And the results, I think, are very good. Mm. We moved it up from amber to amber green. So that's a moderately positive rating on my system on the 28th of February. 28th of March. It was their calendar 2025 results, which were very, very good. Profit almost tripled to £3 million PBT. EPS did triple, which brought the PE down to 7. So that was at 20p. So we flagged that on the day as being a good opportunity.
Yeah.
And the shares have done well, haven't they, since then? Well, the only thing, my only query on it really, is how much of the profit growth is one-off in nature due to cost-cutting and winning some more contracts. Can it scale up further? So it's just a question. I don't know the answer. The scalability of it would be my main question mark over Pebble Group, but happy to be informed on what it is. I see it's paying dividends now as well. No, it's that the Pebble Group. Oh, I think I'm looking at the wrong Pebble. Oh dear, it's PEB. I was looking at PEBB. Oh dear, oh dear. Schoolboy error, Paul. Yeah, here we are. PE of 11.3 times. Still reasonably priced, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah, and it's 2.5 times sales, and what is it, 7.3 times EBITDA. Yeah, for a software company, if it can carry on growing, it's going to do very well. It plays in a market with a lot of big boys, but clearly it's pushing its weight around and doing, you know, it's punching above its weight, in fact. So I would say, yeah, I mean, they've obviously got something that seems to be working. No reason, in my view, to sell it. Would somebody buy them at these levels? Yeah, possibly. So, yeah, I don't think it's quite illiquid, I think. That'd be the one thing to just bear in mind.
Yeah, you're right. It is. And Kestrel are in there. They've got 25%. Mm. They like recurring revenues businesses in particular, don't they?
Yeah.
Hawk, is that something to do with them as well? Because it's another bird of prey, isn't it? I don't know. So,
Hawk is that guy, isn't it? There's a famous investor. I can't remember. Yeah, he's a famous guy. I can't remember what his name is. But, yeah, that's quite a big investor, that is, that guy.
Yeah, okay. And then the CEO, he's only got 1%. So, yeah, it does look quite concentrated, the shareholder list. Hence, you're right, it will be illiquid, won't it? So, I don't know how Laurie will sell his position when he needs to. He'll have to just sell it on to another institution, I guess, won't he? But it was a great call from him on this one, and I think it's a nice business. So, yeah, we like it. Amber green from us, which is 4 out of 5 stars.
Good. Let's go to property services. We've got Zoo. Look, he's asking about LSL property that I think specializes in, well, it's basically, it's in the name, property services, but I think it does lots of valuations and of properties for banks and for, you know, different parties in the property industry for mortgages and this sort of stuff, but also like surveying as well. And I think they also arrange mortgages and this sort of stuff. I think the business has done well. The shares actually are pretty low up for surprisingly. Is that because they've just been artificially sold off, or what's your view anyway?
Oh, very positive. Yeah, we like this one a lot. I think I might have even upped it from amber green to green. We had an update from them quite recently, 15th of May. Here it is. Strong performance in line with expectations, it says. And interestingly enough, they said very similar to what around the time, same time, that the Property Franchise Group said, which I think we spoke to them together, didn't we, TPFG? And they were remarkably upbeat about the UK property transactions market. They said, you know, just London is soft, but outside of London, they said the UK property, residential property market is ticking along fine. It's a kind of average year. But maybe because all the analysts and all the brokers and whatnot and the PRs all live in London, so they think everything's terrible nationally. But the fascinating thing from both TPFG and LSL, they've both said it's fine. We're trading in line. And so you've got a really low PE with LSL. You've got a lovely dividend yield. I added it to my bonkers basement bargain bin list recently. So I think, yeah, I think it's a lovely value share. So, yeah, like it a lot.
Yeah, you asked, didn't you, the Property Franchise Group, the CEO, whether he was going to buy LSL. And he was very tight-lipped.
That's right, yes.
He was very tight-lipped.
We got a politician's answer, didn't we?
It was very informative. Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. Let's move on. We've got Steve Lewis asking about Softcat, the IT sort of like consultant in the UK. I think they do sort of like software selling, and they do sort of a bit like there's a few of them a bit. But anyway, what's your view on Softcat?
Yeah, we like it. We moved up from amber to amber green again on this one on the 18th of March. When it was £12 a share, with an exceptional, that's the word they use, exceptional first half performance. And full year guidance was upgraded. So people have done really well on this. I mean, it was superb H1 results. And I think we had another update, didn't we? That was on 18th of March. We had another update on 22nd of May. So that was last week, continuing to perform well. And yeah, we think it's, I mean, you know, the pricing is now kind of more up with where you'd expect it to be. The PE is just shy of 20 times, I think. But you're getting a 3.5% yield and buybacks, and it keeps upgrading profits. So, I mean, I'm not really sure what they actually do. You know that obviously it's something to do with software, as you say, isn't it? But do you know why they're doing so well in particular?
I'm guessing AI is helping them because it's bringing forward demand. And also what you've got is that a lot of people are they're basically front run the increases in hardware prices going up.
Right.
So they've basically been trying to get their deployments out quick. And therefore, you've had some demand from future periods, effectively bolstering sales. And it depends on where you are. I know things like Computer Center, for instance, has really done really, really well out of data centers, arming those guys. So I think that's really, that's one of the reasons why Softcat certainly is improving performance, because of effectively you've brought through a bit of demand and there's a bit of AI associated with it. How sustainable that is the big question, with how much competition.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've just found that bit actually on my notes. I missed it early. Yeah, pull forward of demand due to memory shortages and customer demand for AI infrastructure. So yeah, you're spot on there. So but you do then, yeah, pull forward of demand kind of has a slight alarming aspect to it, doesn't it? When you see that, you think to yourself, okay, what happens when that reverses? You know, so maybe that's one to maybe consider top slicing or banking some profits after that move. But that's up to each individual investor, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't suppose you've, in the, I hear this tweeting in the background. I don't suppose you've got zippity doo dah, the blue bird on your shoulder, have you, somewhere in the background? There, Paul?
I don't know what the background noise is. I've got the patio doors open, so it's,
okay.
I know, it's genuine bird song, actually. That's,
I know what it is. Okay, I thought I was going mad then for a moment. It's lovely. Very good.
No, you wouldn't expect that in North London, would you? But there you go.
Okay, I've got a few, but we've got just a couple more. We've got NW. K Madman, he's asking about XP Factory, that again is bucking the trend in experiential leisure. These guys do escape rooms and the Boom Battle Bars. Boom Battle Bars probably not doing so well, but escape routes are still going from strength to strength.
I know, it's bizarre. People always say, don't they, oh, concentrate your money in your winners. Well, the trouble is, you don't know what the winners are, which ones are going to be the winners and the losers. I mean, this is the star of my trading account. It's the biggest profit I've got on any position. So, and I they're trading quite badly. Yeah. They put out profit warnings and things. It's now loss-making. But as I've always said on this one, the reason I bought the shares is it's worth much more to an acquirer than it is as a standalone business. You could just immediately whack up 5 or 10% even on the profit, on the gross profit margin. If, say, Wetherspoons bought it and started supplying it with booze at the prices they pay for it, you see. So yeah, definitely more valuable. I did hear a rumor, I think I've mentioned this before, and it's only a rumor, but I've been told they turned down a 25 pence takeover bid some time ago. Which really it should have been announced to the market, I think. You can't have that swirling round as gossip. It should be, I think they need to tell us if that happened or not, really. And yeah, very interesting. I've decided not to sell. You've got three individuals, obviously well-heeled individuals, who have all been accumulating stock. So all three of them are up to about 7 or 8% each. So that is quite unusual, isn't it? Where you have three wealthy individuals all buying stock in a share. I think the headphones are about, the battery's about to go. Let's hope it stays working for a little while.
Yeah, okay, well, then finished. Who would buy these guys? Because I know you've mentioned Wetherspoons, but they don't sell alcohol at escape rooms. They only sell them alcohol at the smaller part, which is Boom Battle Bars.
Yeah, I think they have a little fridge with a few beers in. So I think, but yeah, not a proper bar. You're right. So I don't know on that front. Yeah, Escape Hunt seems to be the sort of unsung hero of the group. It's it just grows every year, and it's quite the Boom Battle Bar, the experiential leisure stuff has been a bit of a fad, hasn't it? Definitely, yeah. And the sector's consolidating. Yeah. But I'm very admiring of what Richard Harpham's achieved at XP Factory. You know, he's raised very little capital. He's built this business during terrible macro conditions during the pandemic and whatnot. And they built a business that definitely has value to an acquirer, I think.
Mm. Okay, we've got one final question. We've got Stephen. He's asking about Calnex Solutions, I think. These guys do specialist telco measuring and testing equipment that allow really high-performance telcos and data centers, defense applications, make sure that all their broadband and their communications systems are working absolutely top-notch. So they're really at the top end, these guys are. Came out with results, which I think were quite decent yesterday, actually.
Yeah, it was. We covered this on 26th of May. So, yeah, 2 days ago. Very good results, but coming from a really low base on profits. We can't value it. That's the problem. You need to know the sector and the markets and the competition. You need to do all that type of research on it because, you know, it's on a PE of about 90 or something, which is obviously telling you that the market thinks it can quadruple or quintuple profit. Well, I personally wouldn't want to pay up front for that. So, it's not for me, but it does look like a turnaround is happening there. So the listeners would have to do much more detailed research on it, I think.
Yeah. I think about 2 years ago, their biggest customer, Calnex's Spirent, was bought by Calnex's biggest competitor, which meant that essentially they were pushed out of that channel for, you know, most of their volumes. They've had to recover that. And the way they're recovering it is they're moving more into data, high-performance data centers and high-performance defense applications from their traditional home territory of telcos, which is now about 30% of their business. So it does have a bit of good tailwind behind it. And I, it is very good equipment because it really is top notch premium. It's a bit of a, you know, if you want to go for the best of the best, then these guys are it. The two things I would be, you know, reticent is it hasn't got recurring revenue streams. These industries historically have been cyclical, telco equipment, cyclical. So how can you value? You have to look at the through cycle multiples. Mm. And then also the equipment that they sell, will the prices have to change or be readjusted because of all of the different DRAM costs and all this other stuff? I doubt it, but it'd just be something else to ask. And me and you were supposed to be speaking to the management team yesterday, but unfortunately we got blown out by the PR boys. So I'll speak to Tom, hopefully, or Tommy when we get a chance. So we'll find out the final call on it.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. No, it's, as I say, for me, I don't know how to value it because I don't know anything about the sector. So I've just had to pass on it, really.
Okay, good. So next week, we're going to call it, we're going to miss out next week because it's Mellow on Tuesday and Wednesday. Are you down for both days in Chiswick there, Paul?
Yeah, I'll be there. We've got a table and a television where Arbel and myself will be showing people how our app works, which is absolutely brilliant, the app, and it's part of my premium subscription service for my Substack. So, but hardly anyone's using it, and it's absolutely brilliant. So we're going to demo it to people on demand. So I'm looking forward to seeing everyone at Mellow. And do come along if you haven't booked your tickets already, because it's going to be great. You do the early morning slot, don't you, Paul?
Yeah, I'm early on the Wednesday at 8:15. So if anybody wants to come along and learn about my latest thoughts on how to profit from the UK's takeover boom,
I'd be delighted
to see you. And I will visit your stand there, Paul, because I want to pick up one of your Paulie Pilot pens and anything else you've got there. So and test that out, which would be rather nice. But we're going to skip the vault that Friday next week.
Yes.
I'm on holiday on the Thursday and the Friday. Anyway, I'm down in Hope Cove, Devon, so I'm going to have a few days off. We'll be back on Friday the 12th of June, which I think will be a pre-SpaceX IPO special, because I think that's the day they're going to push the button on 1.5 trillion.
Oh, exciting. Wait, yeah, apparently about a third of UK households want to buy shares in it.
I think I read.
Yeah, my sister-in-law, she's saying, she was on the blower, how do I buy shares in SpaceX? Yeah. So, yeah.
It's phenomenal because he's actually, I think they're pushing about, I don't know, 75, 80 billion of new capital they need on a 1.5 trillion. Yeah. So it's enormous. But the big thing is they've allocated 30% of the shares to retail investors. If you think about that, that's about 25 billion quid, near enough, 20 to 25 billion dollars for retail. Wow.
Yeah.
So I suppose that if you are a meme stock lover, that may not be good news, actually. That may not be good news.
Well,
it's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know it's a marvelous opportunity for space and all the rest of it, but it's these sort of manias or booms, I mean, they always end the same way, don't they, in disappointment. Yeah. So it's just a question of timing. Yes. Is it the admission document out? Because if it is, I'll download it and have a read.
I haven't done it, but I understand it is. Whether a UK person can access it, they legally may not be able to do that. But,
I'll switch my VPN on and say I'm in America.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for your questions. Thanks again, Paul, for all your brilliant insights. And I'll see you down at Mellow on Wednesday with a bit of luck. So
excellent. Looking forward to it. We'll have a glass of Prosecco, I think.
Fantastic.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.